Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In terms of an investment in your company, bringing laughter and a sense of levity to your corporate culture, there is no better time to put your energy in this area than right now. Because people are feeling isolated, anxious, they're struggling with, you know, depression and laughter, as Victor Borja said, it's the shortest distance between two people.
Welcome to the Humorology Podcast with me, Paul Barros, and my glittering lineup of guests from the worlds of business, healthcare, entertainment, and sport, who are going to share their wisdom and their use of humor with you. Humorology is the study of how humour can dramatically improve your business and your life. Humorology puts the fun into business fundamentals, increases the value of your laughing stock, and puts a punchline back into your bottom line. Please remember to like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. My guest on this edition of the Humorology Podcast has had an illustrious career as a comedian, actor and author, and is the founder of the amazing organisation Laughter On Call. Her company connects comedians and patients with Alzheimer's to create cheer and connection to community. She provides top-notch comedy and improv training to healthcare workers and families so that they can bring laughter and lightness to those labouring with illness. Additionally, she provides programming for businesses looking to lead with lightness and bringing connection through shared laughter to corporate teams around the world. Her work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and both the New York and London Times. As an innovator in the field of comedy, psychology, and healthcare, she is surely reaching her goal of making connection, one laugh at a time. Danny Klein-Modisette, welcome to the Humorology Podcast.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much. I love when I'm lorded. So I appreciate that you said that I'm lorded. I like that. I'm an American, so that's a big deal. Thank you.
Well, it's all true and it's all from the heart, Danny. I know that you started the whole Laughter On Call business with hiring a fellow comedian to work with your mother who had Alzheimer's and depression. Can you tell me more about the genesis of the idea and how it worked for your mum?
Oh, absolutely. It's actually kind of a quirky story, quirky American story, if I may say. I had moved my mother to Los Angeles from New York City, where she was born and raised. She was a total New Yorker. But it got to the point she had, as you said, she had Alzheimer's and she was depressed. She wasn't even leaving her apartment. And it was $17,000 a month to keep her like not leaving her apartment. And I have children, young children. And so it was decided, my sister and I decided that we would move her to Los Angeles to be near where I live and the kids could visit and whatnot. And when she got here, I found this like really lovely place with a chandelier. It looked very Upper East Side. And I think initially she was like, oh, this is okay. And then realized she wasn't leaving and she became depressed and withdrawn. And I felt terrible. I felt really, really guilty. And I was at my dentist. And of course, because I live in LA, she's also like a life coach. And I was like crying and she wasn't drilling. So she was like, what's going on? And I said, I just feel terrible. I feel so bad for my mother. She's depressed. And I go, I just wish I could hire a comedian to cheer her up. And she was like, oh, that's an interesting idea. Why don't you do that? And the reason I had the idea was because I was a comedian and I couldn't make her laugh. Because when she looked at me, she saw a daughter and history and all that. So I wanted like someone fresh to come in and their sole purpose was to make her laugh. So I said, oh, I guess maybe I could do that. I don't know. I thought you were supposed to go through an agency or something. But I put it up on Facebook that I'm looking for a comedian interested in gerontology paid gig because I wanted somebody to respond. And my phone rang almost immediately. And honestly, it was Amy Stiller of the Stiller and Mira family, you know, very long-term comedians in New York. And so her daughter, very close friend of mine, and she was like, I just saw your post and I know someone in LA who wants to work with seniors. She's like sitting on park benches, you should call her. So I called this woman and she came over, made an appointment. She came over and she did what we do now in the training. And she understood instinctively that you get at eye level, and she was completely honest. And with my mother, didn't talk down to her. And of course it helped that she had a New York accent. So she sat down and she was like, yeah, I know. You don't want to talk to me. No, you're probably thinking, who is this schmuck just talking to me? And there was something about the word schmuck that just like my mother heard the word schmuck and she went schmuck. And then the comedian, of course, went schmuck back. And it was like this like schmuck off. And they were laughing. And I just thought, oh, there it is. That's what I want right there. So I hired her on the spot to come 8 hours a week to sit with my mother and to make her laugh, basically. And within a very short time, it changed my mother's life. Like she opened up, and even when the comedian wasn't with her, she was engaged now with the community, and she was eating again, and just it really changed her spirit. So I wrote an article about the experience for AARP magazine. And I got hundreds of responses from around the world saying, please, can you bring a comedian to London? Actually, is one of the places, and Pittsburgh and Florida and Texas. And so that's when I said, oh, wait, I should really do this as a business, because there's always comedians that need money, you know, to just to tide themselves over. And there's an endless supply of depressed seniors who could really use that kind of interaction. And it was so effective. So that's how the whole company started.
Wow, that's an amazing story. And I love the idea of a schmuck off, to be honest with you. The producer's going to have to beep that, obviously. No, but it's a great story. But does it take a comedian to find the moment that helps people to laugh at themselves? Or can anybody do this?
Oh, that's such a great question, because ultimately I started getting requests from the people running these facilities and from families like, hey, can we learn how to do this? So are there any tools that you can teach? And I had taught stand up for 10 years at UCLA. And I wrote a couple books about the importance of laughter and getting basically taking comedy out of the clubs and into your relationships. So I definitely had a whole training and started training people. So yes, the answer is it's great if it's a comedian, because their instincts are to keep going and to, you know, when you're a comedian and like there's one person not laughing, like that's the person that you are committed. You go, oh, I'm going to get that person. Well, that's can be a lot of what it's like to work with people in cognitive decline, like that challenge. So they have the skills to keep going and the perseverance and the joy of the thrill of it. And they're very easily monologuing, you know, whereas regular people are not quite as gifted or don't necessarily have the freedom to let themselves just keep talking, because a lot of times it can be a one-sided conversation, even though you need to be checking in with the person and reading them. But it's a lot of kind of being able to keep going. And so that's why I think comedians are really well suited to it. But absolutely, I have a whole training that I do with families and caregivers.
Well, you talked about your background of 10 years at training people at UCLA. What kind of tips can you give people to help find the funny, especially in those kind of situations when they're dealing with maybe dementia or very serious things within the family?
Yeah, well, I think authenticity is kind of number one. Like, first of all, showing up for it at all, you're ahead of the game, because a lot of people do not even want to be around that kind of illness, particularly. Like my father, may he rest in peace, died of cancer 25 years ago. And people were there until the day before he died. They were like reading to him from the New York Post and, you know, very compassionate. And when my mother got diagnosed with Alzheimer's, pretty much within 6 months, she was down to like one friend who would visit, because people are so uncomfortable with mental cognitive decline. They don't want to be around it. And also they're afraid they're not going to do it right. It's frightening for people. So they don't come at all, rather than risk not having a perfect experience and not doing it right. So that's number one. If you're willing to show up and have the courage to show up with some kind of joyful spirit, because the other thing that we know about people in cognitive decline, excuse me, is that they become emotionally much more sensitive. So they will mirror back the energy that they're getting. So, you know, beyond being funny and like, if you show up with a joyful spirit, you're already being of service to these people. So that's number one. I mean, it was interesting because when I know that I called the company Laughter on Call, and absolutely initially my impulse was about laughter. But what it came to grow into is this idea of cognitive engagement, you know, but like cognitive engagement on call is like not funny. Nobody wants that. So I maintain that the goal is shared laughter for sure. But really, if you're engaging with the person and taking them in and not talking down to them, not pretending it's not happening, not doing this, oh, she doesn't look good today. No, she's not dressed properly, or whatever people do. They talk about the person in front of the person instead of honoring them and honoring exactly where they are. So I think, and that's the beauty of stand-up, right? It's like, it's the truth teller. And so if you're able to be the truth teller, you're giving them such a gift. Now, of course, there's parameters around that, right? We don't want brutal honesty. Like, we believe in honesty, just not brutal honesty. Like, I know it sucks here, mom, and you're never getting out. No, you would never say that to a person. Now, nobody would probably, although I have heard people say really, really bad things to their parent because of past anger and everything else, which is why hiring an outside comedian, someone fresh, is such a good idea. And that's not a pitch for my business. I'm just saying, like, when you have a history with the person and they're in mental decline, it can be very, very challenging. So I have heard people be inappropriate. And so you do have to take, if it's your family member, you do have to kind of do a personal check and leave that history at the door, because there's no place for it anymore. They won't know. It's not relevant. So
I think that's really interesting, that whole thing. And I love the fact that you're talking about showing up, because very often people don't show up. A friend of mine's mother died this week, and people don't call. And I've learned over the years that you can't just send a text or a message and everything. Pick the phone up, however awkward it is, because that person needs to talk. And if they don't need to talk, what you do is you say, look, if you don't want to talk, you just put the phone down there. I completely understand. But the ability to show up. And the other thing you say was to have a joyful spirit. Now, in psychology, we say, and you know this well, that if you want anyone to go into any state, you have to go into that state first. So showing up with a joyful spirit, of course, can change the other person as well, because it's a symbiotic relationship.
Absolutely. It's mirroring. I mean, what they call in the cognitive world is mirroring. But, you know, something that people ask me a lot is like, well, how do you find your comedians? And how do you find these people who can do this? And it turns out there is a whole parallel universe of comedians who either had an aging parent or worked in a senior community or just have this like love of seniors. But what's most important, I don't care about your resume. It's, do you have a joyful spirit? Can you show up and change the energy in the room? That's really the job. Can you come in and take, given everything we know it's sad. Like, this is another thing that I say when people say, well, how did you think of laughter and Alzheimer's? Laughter and all, like, that doesn't know. And the point is that we know it's sad. It's a given. It's sad. It's a very long, sad journey. But it's not sad every moment. And that's the thing that we're trying to capture and grab like a comet, you know, those moments that are not sad, and to be available to them and to exploit them and try to build on those moments is really the task. And why, you know, I found a professional is really great at that, again, because they're not coming in with any history to the moment.
So remarkable stories. What do you think the biggest difference that makes a difference is? Is it because you touched on it earlier on about listening and being connected? I always talk about this because I actually think that comedians, and obviously having grown up working at the Comedy Store and all over, I've seen hundreds and hundreds. The really good ones are actually listening, because they're sensing what the crowd is giving them and they're working off that energy, and it's a to and fro of that. So how important is the listening aspect of what you're talking about?
Oh, it's so key. And yeah, I mean, in the book that I wrote, I wrote a book about marriage and laughter called Take My Spouse, Please, right?
It's a great book. And it actually, but do you think that laughter is the lifeblood of any relationship, whether that's with a parent or with a spouse?
I do. I absolutely do. But I want to just answer your question about listening, because the reason I brought the book up is because chapter two is listen. So in a marriage, right? It's like, and I always say, as you learn that as a comedian, that really, as you just said, the best ones, if you're in a scene and the audience is your scene partner. So if you're not working off what you're getting, then everyone feels that the moment is not truthful and they get distracted. So for example, I'm doing my bits and I'm going to do whatever bits I do. Okay. I can never make a decision. That was a big part of my comedy persona. And I have my bits and my set list. And then the waitress comes forward and drops a tray of drinks at the foot of the stage. But I'm so committed to my material that I'm not going to, but meanwhile, the whole audience is seeing that, like the energy has changed. There's something's gone on in the moment. So if you're not in that moment, you've missed an opportunity. And I think it's that is translatable to all relationships. If you're unable to be present to the moment, to really take the person in. And of course, as we know, listening isn't just with your ears. It's active listening is body language, tone of voice, words. Yes, of course. But it's the whole enchilada, shall we say. And so that comes right out of stand-up, to be able to listen in that way, to take in the whole. I know I feel so California when I say energy, but the energy, you know, in the room, whether it's one-on-one or a large audience, it's absolutely essential.
I couldn't agree more. And I think your work is remarkable. And we'll come back to more of that, because I want to know more of that as we go along. But tell me, what makes you laugh, Danny?
Oh, my God. The unexpected, people who are willing to say what's really going on in a set of circumstances that maybe someone might want to be polite, but instead they say the truth, authenticity. They say the truth of what they're feeling. That totally makes me laugh. I'm always a sucker for that. Something that doesn't feel premeditated, you know, the spontaneous, truthful moment. I'll always laugh at that, you know?
Well, okay. So in a spontaneous, truthful way, tell me a true funny story about something that's happened to you.
All right. So this is going to be a little dark. This is a little Joe Orton-esque, but I thought, why not, right? So my mother died like a year and a half ago. And we were all like, it was a long journey, as we know. And so we're all at around the bed, and like, this is the moment, you know, the labored breathing and all that. I know, stay with me. I know it doesn't sound like a funny setup. And so she's, you know, and you have to know that my mother was very opinionated and very high energy and, you know, always right about everything and very fabulous. She was like a fabulous New York woman. So, you know, the breathing, there's like pauses between the breathing, and then there's like a big pause. So I turned to the hospice and my family, and I'm like, well, I think maybe that's a wrap. And, you know, and then you hear like one more. She's like, one more. I'm not done yet. And I couldn't, it was like funny because it was so, the timing of it was so perfect. Cause I had just said, I think that's a wrap. And then you just heard, not yet. And I do like that kind of dark humor. I thought that was really, really funny. And I, you know, I miss her, and it's been a, you know, the only good thing is that she died before COVID, you know what I mean? So we got to have a funeral, and I'm super grateful for that. We were able to fly, but she was a big presence in my life. So, you know, that's what I like, the juxtaposition of what's appropriate and not judging something as being appropriate or not appropriate. And just if it tickles you, like, it's okay. Obviously there's parameters again around that, but I don't like making fun of children. I don't like stuff where anybody's in danger, like children, where there's a real threat. I don't like that. I don't think that's funny.
Isn't it a thing? Because that's a wonderful story. And actually, I find that like really moving that you were able to laugh at the situation in its whole context. But isn't the thing about comedy that you don't know you've crossed the line until you go over it? And so, therefore, it's about playing with that line all the time. And I mean, I think that's beautiful because, I mean, when my father died, God rest his soul, we went back to Hungary where he was from. And I walked into a room of all my relatives who were there, and you could cut the tension with a knife, and everybody was sad. And he died a few months before his 90th birthday, and we were all going to have a party. And I literally went, oh, typical miserable bastard, ruining our party. And there was that gasp, audible gasp, when everybody went, no, you know, that too soon moment.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then it just broke. And everybody was laughing, and they knew it was from the right place.
Right, right.
But isn't that the job of the comedian sometimes to break that spell so people can have relief on that level?
Yes, yes, yes. It is like the court jester. I don't think that's really changed, you know? I spent half a year in London in college researching the our origin of the National Theater and why we didn't have a comparable institution in the United States at the time. We still don't. And, you know, when I realized it, well, it comes from the monarchy. Like, that was like part of the monarchy was the court jester. Like, there's an appreciation for that, I feel. But it's interesting about pushing the envelope and what you said about, you know, sometimes you have to go too far before you know you've gone too far. And doing all this corporate work this year, because we've done like over 200 corporate events, and there's certain rules. I don't come from that culture. There's a lot of rules in the corporate world, you know, about status and respect and all that. but the funniest one for me, because everybody's trying to do virtual, you know, because we're all stuck still. Many people are still stuck. So that's why they're bringing us in to virtually, like, how can we create connection and make people laugh? And so we'll be in sales meetings, and like, I have a thing about escape rooms. So corporations are doing escape rooms as like, I don't know what. So I do like 5 minutes every time someone brings it up. I'm like, oh, because we don't feel trapped enough during COVID. We need to, you know, put some trapping icing on our feelings of being trapped. Like, that's a great idea. And I will do this, and my assistant's on the call with me. And then the person from HR will be like, yeah, we did it last week, and it, you know, I thought it went well. I don't know. And then I'm like, oh my God, like, I just totally alienated this poor woman who probably spent $10,000 on an escape room during a pandemic. I don't get it. But sometimes my opinions get ahead of me. Like, I think something is so funny. Like, to me, that is the height of funny, like trapping people when we're trapped. Like, I don't know how you don't see that. But no. I was so, oh, it was bad. That's when I've
I completely agree. It's because I do a lot of corporate work myself and everything. I think sometimes that's our job, is to come in and say the unsayable. And you make a great point that it is essentially the court jester. You come in from the outside and you can look at it with a different light. And people can go, do you know what they said? That was probably true, wasn't it, about our company? It's easier to say through humor.
Yes, yes. And there's a book that just came out. These two Stanford professors wrote a book called Humor Seriously. And on the cover, I have it here somewhere, it says, you know, where humor is your best weapon, or your weapon. They have the word weapon. And, you know, we make such a distinction because of Laughter on Call, because of where we come from, that we're from the healthcare space, and we don't want to use humor as a weapon. Like, we want to use it as a way to build connections and to make people feel included. And I mean, loved is maybe too strong a word for the business world, but that feeling of belonging and mitigating isolation, like not feeling so alone as we continue to face this situation. Like, how can we use it to build relationships and build trust? So that's something also that colors, you know, I've been saying now, I don't know if you're familiar with this here, but that, you know, Laughed on Call is basically the Ted Lasso of comedy.
You're going to have to explain that to our audience.
Okay, so Ted Lasso is this show on Netflix with Jason Sudeikis from Saturday Night Live. And it's super corny funny. It's about this like corny funny guy who is hired to coach a soccer team, or football for you guys. And it's actually like a revenge thing from this wife. She hires the least talented qualified person for the job, basically, who's like the happiest, most loving, most not competitive guy, played by Jason Sudeikis. And he's corny and sweet, and he brings her cookies. It's like the antithesis of what you know, competitive sports. And it's incredibly charming. He wins you over. And as opposed to, the New York Times did a piece recently, as opposed to the comedy of, say, Ricky Gervais. I know you know who that is.
Of course.
Right. So Ricky Gervais is edgy and kind of can be kind of mean. That's his game. So they were doing a comparison of like how in current circumstances, audiences need more of the Ted Lasso, the warm and fuzzy, because we're just all so vulnerable right now. So that kind of mean-spirited comedy, people are not gravitating towards.
I completely agree that we need, but we do need a combination of both, don't we? Really, because Ricky Gervais is still selling out arenas all over the world. So he would disagree, but he would argue. I know that everything should be funny, which you are in agreement for, because the story you just told about your mother and I told about my father. It's where it comes from. And if it comes from the right place, it can be funny.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think what you're talking about is like, nothing is sacred, right? To a comedian, yeah. Nothing is sacred. Like, let's just go do it. Let's call it out. Let's shed light on it with humor so that we can then have a real conversation about it. That's the Hannah Gadsby, what she's doing, like all of that, bringing, you know, because if you get people laughing about something, they will talk about it. As opposed to pretending it's not happening or it's not there. So I'm a totally big proponent, and I'm glad Ricky Gervais is still selling out.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Does the truth go down easier when a joke is attached to it? Do you think that that's fundamentally what it is?
Absolutely. I mean, I wrote a show and toured for a year in a show called Too Thin, T-W-O Thin. And it was a comedy show about eating disorders, about anorexia and bulimia, because like, what's funnier than that? But we told funny monologues. It was two comedians. We went to every college in the United States. It's a big deal here. Maybe not as...
No, it's huge here as well.
Yeah. So the fact that we were honest and had a sense of humor about our personal experience, again, it opened the door. It's saying like, yeah, this is the truth, and it's okay to talk about it. So I absolutely believe, I mean, even, you know, when my father died, I was doing another show called The Move, which was about giving up my apartment in New York to get married. And the whole, really, the story was about grief. That was a play about grief, but I couldn't go, oh, here's a play about grief, everyone. No, I was like eating and had puppets, and it was like crazy funny single woman who didn't want to get married, basically, who was afraid to get married. But then 3/4 of the way into the show, when you're already laughing and you're with me, then we see my father's sweaters that I won't throw out and that I won't get out the door. I will not leave the apartment. So it was all really a setup for a conversation about how we grieve. But just to open it with how we grieve, I'm just bored and I'm like, ugh. But if I can make you laugh first, then you're going to engage.
Well, that's it. It's you've created the state change at that point, so people feel free to step in. And when there's that lightness attached to it, which is what the whole Humorology project is about, is not everybody thinks, oh, it's about gags and jokes. It's not really. It's about lightness. It's about connection. It's how you make the connection to the important things in life, using a lightness, a humour, humanising people because of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So is everyone potentially funny, or is it a gift given to the few?
I have to think. I think everyone, not everybody is funny, because I think comedy is music, right? So not everybody can hear the rhythms of comedy and timing. And that's very tough to teach if you can't hear it. But I do think everyone has the potential to make someone laugh. And that comes from saying the unexpected, saying something courageous. Again, I think like probably the most effective tool is saying something unexpected that's truthful. I think anyone has being authentic. Anyone has the potential to do that if they have the courage. That's the thing. It's a courageous act to reveal some personal truth about yourself with perspective, right? Because the great thing that laughter does and humor does, I think, is it lends perspective. It says, we can laugh about this because it's not hopeless. It's not always gonna be like this. Like, this is the moment where we can laugh because there's hope. And so I think that's my answer. I think not everybody is a gifted comedian or a mimic or has great control of their instrument as a comic performer. But I think people all have the capability to make other people laugh.
No, I completely agree, because I consider my job, and I think probably your job, is to find the moments that help people laugh at themselves. And by doing that, and as you said, the perception of the problem is lightened. And I think that's what we're talking about here, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, there, you know, and I mean, this is something that I'm sure you've talked about in the past, like somebody's ability to have a sense of humor about themselves. I mean, that's really key. If someone doesn't have a sense of humor about themselves, that is a really restricting and restrictive dynamic, because it often says, this better be perfect. You know, it's got the perfect vibe to it. And if you can't laugh at yourself, it means you don't have enough self-awareness to maybe make a change. Like, you're just closed, basically.
No, I think that's 100% true. But, and I think that actually it's one of the traits that I would say sociopaths have, is that inability to laugh at themselves and have an ego that just won't allow that. And that's where the fragility comes in. And I think in order to grow, you have to be able to go, yes, I am ridiculous. I have this ridiculous side. I know that is. And sometimes that's a hard place to get to, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, often it is, you know, the laughter comes out of pain, you know, of facing a frailty. But again, when you face the frailty and you are able to get to laughter, it's because you know it's not the end of the story. You know that you've, okay, I have this awareness now, and we can laugh because, like, I'm not always going to be this way. Like, there's hope. And I think, you know, that's when things are hopeless, when you can't. And again, I think that gets back to the very beginning of Laughter on Call with my mother, where it was feeling hopeless. She was feeling hopeless. Like, she, so to hear her laugh at that, in that first moment, it was like, oh, yes, there's hope here. There's more life left in her. You know, so it's such a gift to be able to lend perspective to someone by making light of a situation. It's not to say, it's not dismissing what they're feeling and like, yeah, whatever. It's saying, hey, I see you. That is awful. And you know what? It's not always going to look like this. Like, let's, you know, it could be worse, which I guess there's some controversy about that kind of sympathy now. It could be worse is being touted as dismissive or minimizing and not good listening. But
well, yeah, I know you used the word. I think the first thing, that if you have enough connection, if you have enough rapport with the person, and this is true for everybody in business, this is, you know, in healthcare, I used to train doctors at the biggest teaching hospital in Europe, listening. If you have managed to get rapport with somebody, then you have permission to say things. And it's about understanding and understanding how connection works. First of all, in order to be funny, you have to have been given permission by the group or by the person to do it. And that permission comes from a connection. Are we connected now? You can see that I'm joking. I'm teasing. And here's a word that I was discussing with Dr. Richard Bandler, who developed the whole field of NLP. And we talk about chiding. That chiding is a lovely word. And I'm trying to bring it back as a word. Because when you're teasing, chiding, playing, people love it. Think about the best times you've ever had with your friends. They're not when they're telling you how great you are and how brilliant you were in that last movie you did. That's nice while it is. But actually, your real friends are constantly chiding and playing with you, aren't they? And that's the beauty of life, is to do that. And so I think if you can do that in a situation, whether it's in business or whether it's with a patient or a relative, that's a beautiful thing to be able to do, don't you think?
Yeah. And I think one of the best tools for that is something that I refer to as knowing your audience, you know, and doing your homework to earn that trust. So when I started out as a comic, I was flown to Guam to do I was opening for a comedian. And, you know, I got there and it was like one of these really macho dudes that I was opening for. And we got there and I got the local newspaper and I was on the beach. He was like tanning himself and I was on the beach reading the paper and highlighting and making, you know, and writing jokes about their community. And so when I got out there, there it was like some drug scandal with a big political, like with a leader. And so I was like, oh, you must be relieved to be here and not in the guy who runs your country. And so it immediately earned their trust. They were like, oh, look, she cares. She actually did her homework. And then once you do that, yes, then you've earned your, and again, it was like that comedian saying to my mother, I know you don't want to talk to me. Like I'm earning your, I'm reading you. I'm feeling you and I'm reading you. And I do think that is one of, I think that's chapter 3 in the book, Know Your Audience. You know what I mean? Like, take the time to really invest in who you're talking to so that you can, you know, you're not going to say anything that's too hurtful. You know, you got to know what topics they're really sensitive about.
And I think this is as true in businesses and in sales. I know that you work with sales teams around the world, and I do a lot with sales teams, obviously, with my background in the pitching and the books of the pitching Bible. But that I always say to people buy from people they like and they trust. And you just mentioned the word trust. And I'm like, well, of course, that's, you know, that if you're going to actually move a relationship along or take somebody to a better place, they have to trust you first before they go there.
Right. And if you know enough about them, hopefully, to handle with care what they're sensitive about, then they're that much more willing to feel safe with you. And that's another thing, you know, this is very big right now, obviously in business, is this idea of creating a psychologically safe, inclusive environment. So that is done by reading the room, by knowing who you're talking to and where their vulnerabilities are. So using humor, again, to connect rather than be sarcastic and off-putting and mean-spirited. So yeah, as a tool for creating rapport, I think you used that word earlier.
So if I asked you to write a business case for humor, what would you include in it?
In terms of an investment in your company, bringing laughter and a sense of levity to your corporate culture, there is no better time to put your energy in this area than right now, because people are feeling isolated, anxious, they're struggling with, you know, depression, and laughter, as Victor Borja said, it's the shortest distance between two people. So if you want people to feel shared laughter, if you want people to feel connected to each other, this is the time. Either bring in an outside source or, you know, have some courage to introduce levity yourself as a leader. But now is definitely the time.
I couldn't agree more and everything. But here's the issue, that it's all down to the accountants. Now, they have to see a return on investment. What is the return on investment when they get laughter on call or humorology people in? What is the return on investment? What changes for the better and the bottom line?
Well, I've definitely read a lot of statistics now. If you're talking about the mental wellness space, which is a booming industry, and particularly virtually, but all of it, mental health and mental wellness, billions are being spent now because they do have evidence that it's, I don't know the exact figure, but it's like for every dollar spent, it's a savings of $2.71, because people are healthier. So they're using their health benefits less, and they're not leaving their jobs because they feel welcome and connected. And the cost of replacing an employee is something like $80,000 a year, depending on the level. But so it is an absolute savings. And I think more and more people are aware of this. And I definitely will give credit to that Humor Seriously book. There's a lot of statistics in there about the importance and value, studies on the value of employee retention and health benefits of introducing laughter and bringing companies like Humorology, like Laughter on Call in to help give people tools to create shared laughter.
Well, and you talk about tools, but one of the tools that companies really need is more creativity. And what's the most creative environment? When are people most creative? When they're at play.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, even on that level, if you can get a sense of levity, of play into an atmosphere at work, guess what? I think most organizations have to be creative. In fact, I can't think, even if you're an accounts company, you have to be creative within that. How can we get more customers?
Right. And how can we build on each other's ideas rather than shutting people down? In an environment of play and openness and no wrong answers, which is all the exercises that we do, the games that we play, you know, they start with that yes and game, which I'm sure you've talked about and talk about.
Know it very well, very important. But just actually, because, you know, we've had great improvisers on here. But let's just go over for our listeners to what that's about, because we passed over it. But we shouldn't presume that everybody knows what yes and means.
Oh, absolutely. So this is when we come in and do programming, this is the one, because we do a subscription, you can have 25 events with us. This is the one that's always repeated and repeated because it's very important to reinforce. And it comes straight from the improv world. It's this idea of yes and. It's exactly like it sounds, yes and. And it's a way of communicating where you start your sentence literally with yes. Whatever comes at you, you start it with yes. Doesn't mean you agree in brainstorming or in team building or in anything. It doesn't necessarily mean I agree with you. It means, yes, I've heard you, and have you thought about this? Or, and I'd like more information, rather than, yeah, but, which immediately throws up a negative kind of like, yeah, I don't think, or yeah, maybe, which is like, ugh, so depressing, like maybe you're kind of dumb. So the yes and encourages people to keep the conversation going and to keep moving forward to a solution that you both agree on and can get excited about, with each person adding. That's the and aspect. Yes, I'm hearing you, and I'm thinking we do this. Yes, and how about we do this? Yes, and have you thought about this? It moves it forward. And it creates an environment where people look forward to contributing what they have to say.
I couldn't agree more. And we had the great Neil Malarkey on here from the Comedy Store Players, who I used to guest with, and who are in the Guinness Book of World Records for the longest running show in the world. And the whole premise, the yes and premise, in right. business is really important to create that creativity, because no but closes everything down, and therefore nobody is being creative. So I couldn't agree more on that fact. So does humor, in your opinion, aid resilience? Does it help people get through life on a real and tangible level?
Oh, I absolutely feel that humor is essential for resilience. It's a wonderful way of saying, it's not always going to be like this. Let's laugh about it. It literally gives you more oxygen, and it literally releases endorphins and serotonin. So yes, it's a key part of resilience. It's fortifying. It's like emotionally and mentally fortifying to have a good laugh, get all that hormone jolt, and keep going forward. So absolutely.
Yeah, that hormone jolt, get those endorphins going. Danny, we've reached the part of the show where we're going to do quick fire questions.
Oh my goodness, okay.
Quick fire questions.
Who's the funniest business person you've met?
My gosh, that's so easy. Jerry Zaks, Broadway director. I started out as his assistant when I was 20 in New York City. He has two shows opening, Music Man and Music Man, and what's the other one? Anyway, two shows opening on Broadway, and he is very, 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 very funny guy. So yeah, he's the funniest person I've ever met and worked with.
What is it about him?
Well, he has great timing. He just has great timing, and he's self-deprecating, but not to the point where you're worried about him. But he has humility. He's like a 5-time Tony Award winner and still has a sense of humor about himself. Great sense of humor about himself.
Great. I'm looking forward to meeting Jerry Zaks. What book makes you laugh, Danny?
The book that makes me laugh. I am reading a book right now called Lady Parts by Deborah Kopakin. And it totally makes me laugh because she's so bold. And it's actually every chapter is about like a body part that stopped working for her. And she's completely bold about it, like with the uterus and the breast and heart. And she's just very funny in her candor about the experience. And she also, the pacing of the book is so good that you're like, oh my gosh. And she was really tight with Nora Ephron. So there's really funny scenes in the book with Nora Ephron. I mean, where she writes about these meals with Nora Ephron. So that's the most recent one that has really made me laugh out loud. Like, oh my God, you know, that laughter of recognition of like, oh gosh, oh. Exactly.
Well, I'd like to say that your book, Take My Spouse, Please, made me laugh because it's just that combination of can we use comedy to sort out our relationships? I thought it's just such a great premise. But actually, is laughter the lifeblood of any relationship, you think, whether that's in comedy, in a spouse, or in any other world?
Okay, well, my opinion, you know, I feel like the opinions here are expressed only of those who've said them and not for the blah, blah, blah. That is my opinion. That's how I persevere. I wrote that book at the 10-year mark of our marriage. And in a month, it'll be 20 years that we're married. And I absolutely believe that that what I learned researching that book and writing that book saved our marriage for me, because and for both of us, because we recognize what I learned. And this is an interesting thing about shared laughter. When you go to analyze it, you realize the laughter is actually a byproduct of all of these other components being in place. Of trust, of listening, of letting go of the moment before, paying attention to timing. Like that's the thing, when you break it down, laughter is a result of all of that. So if you're doing your work in that respect, that the laughter will be the result of paying attention essentially and being authentic. So yeah, I really think all of my successful relationships, we have to be able to have a sense of humor together.
So, what film makes you laugh?
It's really funny. This is going to sound like narcissism, but I will tell you that the movie that makes me laugh out loud is the remake of The Out-of-Towners with John Cleese, because I played John Cleese's assistant. So it was me and Steve Martin and Goldie Hawn. That was my scene. And it always makes me laugh because, first of all, when I saw that was my scene, I was like, okay, well, I can die now. Like all my comedy legends are around me. That was genius. But also John Cleese was so gifted. So it was real. I had to hand him a phone and like, as it's for you. And he was like, oh no, turn the phone around. It'll be funnier. And he was right. And so that's why that comedy lesson right there just makes me laugh. Plus, he's just the funniest guy. He was a genius. He's still a genius. But I mean, that moment just totally made me laugh out loud.
So, well, four comedy geniuses. And I like the billing that you started. It was me, John Cleese, Steve Martin and Goldie Hawn.
Yes, it was me. I was very big. Yes. Oh, another movie that makes me laugh out loud is The Doors with Oliver Stone's The Doors with Val Kilmer. Because again, I had a small part in that and I played a news journalist in Florida. And I didn't like that. It was a really long shoot day and I did not like the woman next to me. Like she didn't eat all day and all she kept saying is, I'm so hungry. And so I made this choice when I had my line to go like this. And for those of you listening, I rolled my very big eyes and on a 20-foot by 20-foot screen, I looked ridiculous. I look like a type of bored bird. And that makes me laugh out loud when I see that too. Sorry, they're both about me, but what can I say? Those are really funny moments.
Okay, taking a shift to the other side, what's not funny?
I think I mentioned earlier, anything where kids are in peril, I don't think that's funny. And I realized recently, calves, like baby cows, I teach a memoir writing class to 85-year-olds here. And one of my people who's very smart wrote this whole story about having dinner with Joan Baez, and he kept singing some song about the sad calves. Is there some song? Anyway, at the end of the punchline of the whole story was, and then she served calves liver and onions. I was like, ew, like, I don't think that's funny at all. Like the poor little calf, like, I don't think that's funny. And then it was like very tense because I don't think that it was funny. And he was like, I'm so clever, aren't I? And I was like, so I don't like anything in peril. Obviously, I don't think incest is funny. I don't think rape is funny. I know Sarah Silverman's done, you know, wonderful things with rape. I don't think it's funny. I think there are certain limits.
So everybody's different, aren't they? And they have to know. But it's very interesting to find where your limits are. What word makes you laugh?
I can only think words that make me squeak, like moist. I don't like the word moist, but that's like, I think a lot of people have a moist issue. Words that make me laugh, I guess schmuck makes me laugh now because it has a personal resonance for me. It'll always have a place in my heart. Didn't I send you an email about like shebang, like the whole shebang?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like the whole shebang and how you can't say that now. You'd have to say like they bang, and that has a totally different connotation. That's funny. They bang would be funny to me. That's very funny.
Yeah, I like that.
Just politically and it did make conscious. Me
laugh. Yeah. Yeah. They bang. What sound makes you laugh, Danny?
One of my comedians, we do a warm-up and you have to do, she do like a ho ho ho. Everybody does ho ho ho. And then for some reason, she feels compelled to have everybody do a bird sound. And then she just completely commits and she's like, ca-ca! 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 And I'm like, only you would do that, Nikki. And you got to see all these people look at her like, I'm not doing that. Don't make me do that. Not. And she's, ca-ca! 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 She's fully committed.
Oh, I love that.
That makes me laugh.
So would you rather be considered clever or funny?
Definitely funny. Clever is like a wordsmith and it feels very surface to me. I think funny comes from your soul and it risks vulnerability and has courage. I don't think it takes a lot of courage to be clever. Clever is, and clever can be a little mean and cutting. I don't know. I associate it with things that I don't feel in my soul, in my spirit. I want to be funny. I want to make people like laugh from their heart and from acknowledgement of something, from feeling recognized, as opposed to just stringing words together and very, oh, that's so clever how you did that.
Beautiful answer. And finally, Danny, desert island gags. You can only take one joke with you to a desert island. What is it?
I'm assuming that we're going to a tropical island and I'm going to say slipping on a banana peel. I'm going to bring it old school. I'm going to hope that my person that I'm sequestered with has a sense of humor. I'm going to eat the banana first so that I am fortified. And then I'm going to just leave it in a handy place and watch them go boom, but in the sand. See, I have so much heart. I can't have them slipping and then cracking their head open on a rock. Then I would have to take care of them. So banana peel in the sand, boom, going down.
It's yours on the desert island. Danny Klein-Morissette, thank you so much for sharing all that wonderful knowledge with us on the Humorology Podcast.
Thank you.
The Humorology Podcast was hosted by Paul Barros and produced by Simon Banks. Music by Steve Hayworth, creative direction by Les Hughes, and additional research by Helen Sykes. Please remember to subscribe, like, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. This has been a Big Sky production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.